So that started as dispensaries have to grow their own. And to a legislature that doesn't know any better and doesn't really give a shit about pot, that sounds very
sensible.
Rational.
Yeah.
Right, sensible. And Chris Romer is an economist. He studied his master's in it, where he considers himself an economist.
That's how he doesn't bill himself as a politician. Yeah.
Economist. And so for him, very early on in the process, when this was clearly a sticking point, I started using the term vertical integration because I knew it would offend his economic sensibilities. You cannot find an example of mandatory vertical integration in the industry. It is, from freshman year economics onward, an option of a company in a normal market that they should have the option to vertically integrate or horizontally integrate however they want, but you would never force it. And he got that. And by calling it vertical integration, it changed the argument that then...
So in a sense, you put it in a more familiar context that he could kind of see it as, not so much as this sensible policy, but as an economic tenet that he didn't want to violate.
Drilling for oil versus energy exploration. Yes, exactly.
And so your intent there was to sort of...
To get color, it to go away to entirely.
Yeah, to color it to the point where it was distasteful.
Right. When it became clear that, like, some form of what we would call vertical integration was going to be required, then that was the ace up my sleeve that I used and abused for the entire rest of the process. Anytime they would start to float something too stupid,
right,
I would be able to come back and say, listen, the vertical integration that you're forcing is the absolute toughest thing for me to sell because it doesn't make any sense to anybody. There's no support for it. Like, I can keep fighting the fight for you, Chris, but this is a big deal. And so we got all sorts of other incremental horse trading maneuvers because they had said so early on in the process that they were not willing to go past 70% of the vertical integration.
Right.
Some form of like a, in case shit happens, you can wholesale, but they were very much opposed. So the MIP license was my work.
So no one had ever done a marijuana infused food license.
So what were they considering for food? How did hash get mixed into that? I think that's a really interesting side.
What happened was, I did tours. I took Massey on tours. So I took Charlie Brown on tours. And I think what happened was...
Now, how did you arrange these? Were these just dispensaries that you had business relationships with, and you were like, hey, I know you're a good spot. Can I bring some people through to show them something exemplary?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Friends and clients. I went and sat in on a couple of the work group sessions for City Hall. And the important part here is... The state of Colorado's legislature only meets from the third week in January through the third week in May, or second week in May, something like that. And this all came to a head starting on July 20th, and by the fall, we had hundreds and hundreds of these statewide. The number was something like 700 by the end of the year.
700.
Dispensaries statewide. Right.
And without in a period where the legislature couldn't make rules.
Exactly. They were not in session.
That's why that happened. I did not know why that happened. Mm-hmm.
How much of this was pure luck? How much of this was... the connections, that unique connections that you had, and how much of this was just being that guy who showed up and had something smart to say?
Well, equal parts one and three, a little bit of two, and I've spent years off and on trying to deconstruct how much of that it is, and I don't know. So the way I see it was, I was in the right place at the right time.
For sure.
I was here in Colorado. I was the only business consultant to put business out there. You hear Warren tell it, Ryan Vincent really loves telling the story. I put up four Craigslist ads in a month and a half, and... I was banking like 10 grand a week, 20 grand a week on just incorporation. It was copy and paste, find, replace, and word, and then have the same talk for hours on end with people over and over, right, teaching them, here is how you co-opt any other rule that exists for any other industry that looks like ours. So if you're selling edible products, why don't you go ahead and get ahead of the curve and follow all of the food handling rules that you would if you're selling cookies at 7-Eleven. I found, and there was some selection bias in the people who chose to pay me, so it was the right place and the right time. I also give at least equal credit to myself for recognizing I had a very unique voice and approach and angle. There was this metaphorical rope ladder hanging right there just out of my reach. If I jumped a little bit, I knew I could not only get it, but I could climb up to the top bigger and better than anybody had done before. And I was a national champion debater, 2-time nationals in high school. I was ranked 5th in the nation.
That's what you said before, you're a debater, you weren't scared to go. Okay.
I was raised from I actually, in middle school, my gifted teacher.
So you're from Massachusetts, you went to school?
Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Suburban,
Missouri Springs, public Missouri. Schools produce this?
Yes.
Way to go, Missouri.
Kansas City, Missouri has 4 of the top 10 most competitive high school debate districts in the country. It is an incredibly intense Midwestern, you know, debate legacy.
That interesting. Goes on.
Churned out a lot of politicians, a lot of lawyers, a lot of business people. Because if nothing else, you spend your high school learning how to build and deconstruct arguments on the fly. And more importantly, you learn how to tailor your message to your audience.
Yeah.
And when from freshman year on, I spent literally, it was the longest athletic, because we're considered an athletic. It was from the first week in October through the end of April. I had tournaments every single week except for 2 weeks off over Christmas. And from freshman year on, you had to look at a stranger in the face and start to make assumptions and just read their body language and their everything to see, okay, is this a college kid who's probably a former high school debater and I can speed and spread, talk fast, hit them on technicalities and do this, or is this somebody like my mom and I need to slow down, be more emphatic with my voice, drive home points that make sense.
So now the question is this, when you're debating someone in that context, right, is that like a boxing match where you're trying to beat that person or you're trying to win over judges? Well, I guess it helps both. It's like a boxing match. You're doing both.
When you have a reputation, my event, so I did cross-ex debate, standard high school debate, which is two people, me and a debate partner, and then against two other high school kids on the same topic all year long. And you get cases of evidence where you have to cut cards. And so I had to learn how to synthesize an entire article into one or two of those quotes you cut out that fit an argument so that when somebody would talk about Tesla coils vis-a-vis renewable energy, I could open up a box and have ready-to-go evidence where I'm quoting, you know, citations and sources.
And that certainly helps when appealing to authority.
Certainly. Because you learn how to build an argument, which is not the same as being a scientist who is proving fact.
No.
It's rhetoric.
It's rhetoric.
And you can abuse rhetoric, or you can use rhetoric for incredible amounts of power.
And at the same time, you know, what I found among many people speaking at hearings before me, in tie-dye t-shirts with pot leaves, is there is no sensitivity to audience, number one. And number two, there's no sense of, like, building a rational argument. And when it comes across...
Varying with facts.
Right.
Frustration, because we know these facts are fucking true.
And regardless of that, that's not an effective way to commit. And then there's also the vinegar-honey argument, like...
Mm-hmm.
Calling someone a fucking asshole fascist is really not going to convince them to see your way.
However, having somebody who otherwise should be on your team screaming through the windows with a bullhorn saying that everything that's going on is fucking fascist certainly helps me look far more moderate.
Right.
Which is what we had with Robert Chase, literally screaming through the windows on the big hearing of 420.